It's Saturday brunch on The Ginny Show. God, I love a good brunch. I love a good conversation and I love a good cup of coffee, especially when it comes with delightful company. Marla Mattinson, thank you for having brunch with me today.
So excited to be here, Ginny.
Marla, I've got to ask you, firstly, how do you take your coffee and what do you order for brunch?
Well, let's talk about the coffee first. Very important. I like black coffee, I just have to say. I like an Americano black, or I like a cappuccino with almond milk or oat milk. I know it might not be super popular. However, that is how I love my coffee.
Fantastic. I love how you've gone the hardcore. Then you've kind of gone left side and you've added a little bit of your own spice to it. It's very original. And what do you order for brunch?
And then for brunch, I'm a big fan of eggs. I love eggs pretty much any style. And if I'm feeling super healthy, I usually want it with a mixed green salad and some sort of vegetables or something. I'm not a huge fan of potatoes, which is also a little odd maybe. However, I claim that. I claim that for myself. It's okay. If I'm feeling really spicy, I will go all the way to French toast.
Oh, okay. I'm glad I've got a wide repertoire of collection there of foods that we can brunch on. I'm kind of curious. I've obviously heard a lot about you. You've been on a lot of podcasts that I've listened to lately, but I kind of wanted to get to know you, and you've got a very fascinating background. So I'm going to start with a very cheesy question. Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up? I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up in the north end of the San Fernando Valley in a little town called Porter Ranch. And if you saw the movie E.T., at one point when E.T. and the little boy were flying over the valley in his bike, on his bicycle, they flew over our park. And that's our big claim to fame in Porter Ranch, as E.T. flew over the park.
That's fantastic. Okay, now that puts into context where you grew up. That's awesome. And what was it like growing up in a small town? I hear different stories from different people that small town America is different from small town Australia. Obviously, there's probably less kangaroos where you're from as well. So tell me, what was it like growing up there?
Well, so obviously we're in a big city, but in the big city is this small little community of Porter Ranch. And, you know, it was really lovely. I used to walk to school and I used to meet my cousin at school and then we'd walk home together from school. And, you know, everybody pretty much knew each other. It was a very lovely community. We lived on a cul-de-sac, which is just a dead end street. So it was very protected and it was really lovely. And then my dad, he's a lawyer and he worked in the city. So he would commute every day, like 20 miles over the hill and back. This is before traffic was insane. And he worked in Century City. So we would also go to the city all the time. And so now I've been living in the city for many, many years. And it's amazing because you have the best of both worlds. You have this small little private community, and then you also have access to theater and amazing food and music. And, you know, so we were always in the city pretty much, I don't know, at least half the time.
Wow. I'm wondering too, growing up in a small city, and you said that your dad commuted quite a lot, how would you say nowadays your parents, their work ethic and who they are, how would you say that's impacted you?
Ooh, I love that question. My parents have an incredible work ethic. And so my dad has been self-employed almost his entire career. And because of that, you know, when you have to work, you have to work. And so we would go to his office on Saturdays, sometimes on Sundays, and we would drive across the hill. My mom would help him out with some legal secretary stuff while he was doing dictations and, you know, working on his cases. And my sister and I would either be roller skating downstairs on the marble floors outside, which was amazing. Or we would be playing in his office in the secretarial suite with all the fun, like sticky notes and dictation machines and typewriters and carbon copy things. Is when, you know, CC meant carbon copy, where you actually had a triplicate file of carbon copy where you write and underneath it, it makes a copy underneath. And that's the old CC. That'll just tell you how old I am. But it was really fun. So going to work on a weekend wasn't a big deal for me because I did it with my family. And so I have this amazing work ethic where if something needs to get done, I'm never going to complain about it. I'm just going to get it done. And I think that's really helpful as an entrepreneur, as, you know, someone who has her own business with her partner. It's like, yeah, man, if something needs to get done, let's just get it done.
One thing that you touched on there was your work ethic and how that you've learned that from your parents as well, and they've influenced you in that way. I was curious about that, Marla, because different people that I've interviewed talk about their parents and how their relationship per se can mold their views on relationships in future and intimacy. But it seems like you've come quite a long way in, I guess, having in this evolved sense of communicating relationships in a very uniquely empowering way, because I listen to you speak about intimacy and different things, and it's right on the money. So I'm wondering, were your parents an example of that for you, or where did you kind of learn that healthy sense of intimacy from?
Wow, I love this. So communication in my family was not amazing. They really tried. However, I learned about communication because I had a desire to live in the truth rather than living in some fabricated sense of, let's just pretend everybody loves each other and move from there. No, I wanted to live my life according to being able to really hear the truth from people who I love and care about, and also be able to speak the truth. And so that we can have a really open communication. And in my family, you know, they tried to do that kind of thing, but really there was a lot of unspoken material around, you can only communicate if it's going to be something happy, something positive, something that is going to sort of uplift the crowd. And talking about the things that were really difficult did not come easily. And so I felt like a lot of things were sort of swept under the rug and never really dealt with. And we were sort of made to say, I'm sorry to each other without actually getting to the root of why we did the thing in the first place. So there was a sort of blanket communication that we learned that was all about kind of like what it took to look good or sound good, but actually to feel good underneath, that was never really touched. So I really made my whole life about very deep, intimate conversation that got to the root of how each person was feeling. And then once I was able to do that for myself, I started to train other people, including couples and businesses and, you know, all kinds of intimate relationships.
In your experience, Marla, and I've interviewed different people, and even speaking from my own experience, my parents were divorced when I was quite young, and I didn't learn healthy relationship habits from them. I kind of cultivated in a kind of trial and error way myself to finally get to the healthiest relationship I've been in so far. But I'm wondering, when you do kind of work with these couples, what's like one of the biggest blockages that you find that they have? What's the most common theme? If you can narrow it down to a few, what would you find that it is?
Well, I'd say that there definitely are a few things. So communication is always at the root of any issue with any couple. So whether the issue is sexual, whether the issue is financial, whether the issue is, you know, there's resentment building, at the core underneath any of those issues is communication. And so the biggest issue that I see is when one partner has a view on a particular incident and the other partner does not share the same view, they come to a crossroads, and either you have established healthy communication where you can really help each other excavate the true meaning that you're making about the incident, and then you come to an understanding together of what meaning did you make out of this scenario? What meaning did I make out of this scenario? And then we kind of excavate it together in order to come up with a shared definition of what actually happened, or to agree to disagree. But either case, the idea is that you excavate it together, and then you sort of come to the same understanding together. And that's the biggest issue, is that couples have different understandings about the same scenario. And then if that's not dealt with, those differences in understanding create a bigger gap and a bigger sense of separation. And then you start to feel like you're alone in a relationship. And that's when things start to really kind of fall apart.
No, that sounds right on there, Marla. I'm curious too. I didn't mean for this to turn into a couples coaching session for you. We're on the Ginny Show, but I'm wondering, Marla, like, you've got a pretty fascinating background. Neuroscience, where did that come from?
Neuroscience. Yes, neuroscience and mathematics, by the way. So here's the funny thing. When I was in middle school, I took math class, of course. I didn't realize I was actually great at math. I just had a big crush on my middle school math teacher, Mr. Flint. And so I just would pay solid attention in class, and I learned all the basic algebra and geometry skills. So I had a great foundation. Then it turned out later in my life, when I went back to school as an adult to go back to college, it turned out I was amazing at math and I loved it. And so the math and the neuroscience, I studied math and neuroscience at UCLA, which was quite challenging. And honestly, if I had another life to live, I would probably go back and get a PhD in neuroscience because it's just so fascinating to me. Yeah, that's my secret side hobby. So I got a degree in math and neuroscience. And so pattern recognition is the biggest part of that that makes me excited. And so all of relationships are patterns. If you can recognize the pattern, like for example, the pattern of when you first come home after work and what happens when you come home, when your partner comes home, and what happens when you're together after being apart for a while during the day, what's happening when that pattern happens? Like, are you excited to see each other? Are you nervous? Do you feel enthusiastic? Are you feeling like, ugh, annoyed, right? What's happening in those patterns of when you come back together or when you leave? And if you have the same pattern that happens over and over, that's called stagnation. So we have to mix it up. We have to keep it fresh. We have to keep it alive. And so if you start to recognize the patterns, the habitual patterns that you get in on a daily basis with your partner, and you start to shift it into something more exciting, enthusiastic, and memorable, then you start to have more of an exciting relationship and the passion starts to build because you're bringing a fresh self to all of those times where you come back together after not seeing each other for a while. Even, if somebody's traveling and comes back together. But the idea is the patterns that we get into is what makes or breaks the relationship. So the healthy patterns, we want to keep those. The unhealthy patterns, we want to start looking at them and navigating through them in new and exciting ways, right? So like, what if you could bring humor into a fight, for example, like being silly together rather than being aggressive? So the unhealthy patterns, we want to shake them up and make them fresh and new. And the healthy patterns, we like to leave those how they are.
No, that sounds pretty cool. It's almost like, imagine when you kind of coach couples, you'd probably go for the patterns first within what they're forming together, I'd assume.
Yes. And what we do is we take a look at how each person brings themselves to a conflict. And then we help them see how you are the master of how you bring yourself. Your partner has no control over how you bring yourself. You have 100% control. So the idea is if you can take 100% responsibility for how you show up, then it's easier for your partner to have compassion for you if you're in a conflict, because you're not blaming, you're not judging, you're not throwing, the blame on them. You're taking responsibility for yourself. And so when both partners start to practice that, that's when you can bring in silliness and humor. Like, oh, look at me getting controlling again. That's not shocking, right? So you can kind of make light of it a little bit, and then you can help each other turn faster and faster. And, the idea is that we're human. So it's not like these things are ever going to go away completely. The idea is that instead of spending a long time in conflict, you spend a short amount of time in conflict. The intensity gets less and less and less because you're coming out of it faster and faster and faster, and you're doing it together. And that's the idea is, when you can help each other come out of those patterns together, it just makes the conflict actually turn into a playful experience where you can connect instead of instead of tearing each other down.
Marla, I just had a thought in my head. I wonder, when you go out with your couple friends, do you sometimes find yourself mediating between them?
Every once in a while, something will happen. And yeah, we'll get into a little bit of mini coaching on the spot. But really, we're actually pretty relaxed. When we go out, we just like to hang and have fun. And I do have to say, we had this amazing experience. We're in this mastermind group, and they had an in-person mastermind that we did together for a couple of days. And they took us to this restaurant. You would love this. It's called Opaque, and it's a restaurant in the dark. you can't see anything. They walk you in there and you sit down in your chair. It's pitch black. And all the servers are sight impaired. And so there is this experience of just going in and enjoying being in the sensual, tactile sensation of a meal. So when we were there at this mastermind, there were about, 15 of us, maybe 20 of us in the room. And because it was pitch black, people started asking us relationship questions and questions about sex and sexuality. And because you couldn't see anybody's face, people were really bold. And it was really amazing because people would just ask us questions and we would just, of course, just go straight in with the hardcore raw truth. And we did major coaching sessions in the dark. You would have loved it. You would have just been like, oh my God, this is amazing. It was really fun. So, if you want to have a coaching session with a relationship expert, go to a pitch black restaurant. That's my recommendation.
That's fantastic. I was just curious too to know, because I'd imagine that it's like when you go out with comedians, you kind of expect them to be funny all the time. I'm wondering if you have the same pressure with couples counseling.
Exactly.
So, Marla, I guess my next question is more towards, your routine and how you kind of found this space. You clearly are very self-aware and you're very much aware on communication tools on how valuable they are in romantic relationships and any kind of relationship, really. I'm wondering, what are some of the practices that you do for yourself to prepare you for your day and I guess prepare you to be the excellent communicator that you are?
Well, the first thing that I do is when I wake up, the first thing I do is I put one hand on my heart and one hand on my belly, and I spend about 2 minutes in gratitude just for my physical body, just for being alive and just taking a few breaths, because every once in a while I wake up in a really bad mood. And so that bad mood can really transfer into the entire day if I don't watch it. And so what I do is I have that moment of gratitude and I just kind of scan my whole body. Like, I'm grateful for my head and my hair and my vision and my ears. And I just go through my entire body with massive gratitude. And then I roll over and I send some of that love and gratitude out to Julian. And we have a moment together. And then, we kind of lay there together and send out love to the world. That's the first part of our practice. So we get into the right mindset at the very beginning of the day, that not only are we grateful to be alive, we're grateful to have the idea even that we could send out love into the world. And then from there, we have a really playful morning. We have a nice large bathroom, so we get ready together and we play in there and we have fun and we chat about the day. And then we meditate. We have a whole routine in the morning. It doesn't happen every single day for meditation, but it's either going to be some kind of movement or meditation. Always, is for me, it's going to involve some coffee. Julian is more of a tea drinker these days. We love to run out. We live right at the beach in Venice. And so we run out to the water and we do, a little meditation out there and come back. Julian will put his feet in the water, sometimes go all the way in. I will stand at the shore. I don't want to do that in the morning, but he's really great about that. But how we set up the morning, I think, is so important, because every once in a while I forget to do it. And I can tell, because I don't know, about 20 minutes into the day, I'm thinking, oh man, I have a lot to do. And I'm not in that happy, uplifted mindset. And then I will, every once in a while, I'll just go back and lay in bed and do a redo. And I'll just redo it. And I'll, like, you know what? I'm going to go lay in bed and do my morning thing again, because it'll take 2 minutes. And then I can just, start the day fresh again.
I love the fact that you go back to bed. Like, that's kind of encouraging me to go back to nap time to start your day again. That's pretty cool, Marla.
Yeah, I'm a big napper. I'm a huge fan of napping, by the way.
Fantastic. Well, Marla, thank you so much for joining me for brunch. I know we've only hit the tip of the iceberg in this conversation, but I would love to have you back on the Ginny Show, maybe on another day, or maybe we'll just have another brunch. And I'd love to kind of go in further into this conversation, but I really appreciate your time and thank you for having eggs and bitter coffee with me.
I love it. Anytime, Ginny. Anytime.
It's time to party. The Ginny Show.